Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome back to Huff Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
I'm Grace Seegers.
And I'm Haley Bird Wilt.
And as we approach the premiere of Ahsoka on Disney Plus in August, we're stepping back to look at what we want from the upcoming series and what we expect, and whether those two things are always the same or whether there might be some conflict between the two. Obviously, this is sort of a spiritual successor to Rebels in a lot of ways, with Dave Filoni leading the charge on both projects. So we expect to see a lot of characters, in fact, we already know about some of them, carrying over from Rebels, but hey, there could always be more that we haven't seen yet. So we wanted to talk a little bit about how do we expect this show to carry the story of those characters forward, and of course, how do we expect it to carry the story of Ahsoka forward, because we can't forget about Ahsoka herself in the series.
Which Eric did.
Well, some of us weren't going to bring that up, but yes, indeed, in the notes document that I took the lead on preparing very chivalrously and heroically, I might add, I did in fact forget to put a line in to talk about Ahsoka because, you know, I'm on a Rebels kick right now and, you know, she just slipped my mind. But here we are. We're going to get a good look at the status of Ahsoka at this point in the galaxy. And Grace, since you put me on the spot, I'm going to put you on the spot. Where do you think we're going to find Ahsoka at this point? Of course, we've already seen a glimpse of what she's up to from The Mandalorian, and this takes place shortly after that. What do you think is driving her right now, and how do you expect that she will have changed since we last saw her chronologically, let's say sort of prior to the Mando stuff? So, like, how will she have changed from the Rebels era?
Okay. If you were going to say chronologically since the Mando stuff...
We can do that.
Well, I had a totally shallow hope, which is that I hope her like little head tails look better. I can't remember what they're called now.
Oh, the Montrals?
Or the, well, the
Leku,
Montrals.
I think, is for
no,
Twi'lek.
No, Leku's, yeah. Twi'lek.
Oh, excuse me. I'm so sorry.
And we're going to get to that. In fact, we have Leku content for the Hoth Takes listeners who want it coming up later in this episode. Stay tuned.
Yes. No, for the Montrals, which is Togruta specific. I really want them to look better than they did in The Mandalorian, because they did not look great. They looked very, like, styrofoamy.
Play-Doh.
So, yeah, I'm really hoping that whatever else is happening with her, that the sort of makeup is a bit better for her, looks a bit more realistic. Because when you see Ahsoka in Rebels, she has these very long Montrals, and then when you see her in Mandalorian, they're a lot shorter, they look awkward. So I'm hoping that they're a bit longer, they look a bit more like they did in Rebels, and just generally less awkward. To answer your question for realsies, it seems to me like Ahsoka's in a more mature place than we have seen her before, and I'm interested in continuing to explore that, because she seems to be a lot more at peace with her background than she ever has been, and now we know that she's sort of leading this mission to find Ezra, so I guess I'm interested to see her in that sort of leadership role. But because this show pretty much is a spiritual Rebels sequel, I feel like I don't know very much at all about what she's gonna be doing, because it almost feels like she isn't the star of the show that it's named after her, which is then how you get to the problem of us forgetting about her in the notes. So that's really my concern, is I don't know how much of the show is actually really going to be focused on her.
Well, I guess it's like, are there any like big hanging questions about her as a character, or like where her story should go? And it's just like the Ezra storyline is just so much more compelling or like mysterious at this point. And so it's like the first thing you think about. But on that note, I don't understand exactly the owl and the like the good side of the force situation with Ahsoka, but I think there's some kind of implication that she has a special connection to the light side of the force after that like story arc in the Clone Wars, and like So I know it's like a little weird to do in one of the more mass market live action shows than it was in a like a cartoon, but I would love to learn more about that in the show that's named after her.
And I think the world between worlds too will probably come up, because we know from the end of Rebels, and clearly because she shows up in Mando and Book of Boba Fett, that she gets out of the world between worlds. So I'm interested to explore more of that spiritual side, like Haley was saying, with her connection to the light side of the Force, but also maybe get more info about how she got out of there and how her connection to the Force it kind of plays out with that.
I love the world between worlds. And I know some Star Wars fans are like skeptical of introducing too much like time travel into this, like the franchise, but I would love for this to be a time travel show, which I know it's probably not going to be, but I just like, I always enjoy time travel films or like shows like that. It's probably a little too ambitious and probably a little too weird.
I mean, well, between worlds is such a cool concept, though. Sorry, Eric.
No, that's all right. I was just going to say, I agree with everything you've said. I also think that the world between worlds is an interesting concept and kind of the right way to do time travel in Star Wars. I think they need to be judicious about how they keep expanding on it and like, where can it be accessed? Because I think it was, like, in Rebels, it was, like, in that temple on Lothal. And, yeah. Like, we don't know if they're going to go back there, although there is a shot of someone, I think it's Sabine, looking at that mural that's now on the wall there. At least I think I'm remembering that correctly from the trailer that was leaked from Celebration, not this past one, but the one before it, the one in California. So I think they're probably going to, as you said, bring it back. I think it's an interesting concept to try to bring into play in what seems like it's on the surface a pretty straightforward Star Wars TV show, a member of this sort of current pantheon of live action series. If they really do some mind-bending stuff with time travel, that could be really cool, but they have to make sure that they've really ironed out the details. It can't fall prey to a lot of the other time travel storytelling that we've seen over the decades, some of it not very well thought out in terms of plotting. I will just add this. I want to see her grapple with the legacy of being one of the very few surviving Jedi who was trained traditionally, who remembers that era. I mean, she knew all of the greats, all of the legends, right? She came into her own in the twilight days of the Jedi Order as an institution. Are we going to see her meet up with Luke and have any conversations about what he ought to be doing? Like, there was that tantalizing moment with them in Book of Boba Fett, which I loved. I actually really, really liked it. As much as I think that was like a bad use of time on a broad level, on a micro level, I liked that moment of her being like, you know, you're so much like your father or whatever. Just a beautiful moment, and I would love to see something like that get paid off in this show. Although, again, using deep fake Luke, it can be complicated. I wouldn't mind if they just cast somebody for this and never talked about it again. But I want to see her legacy as a traditional Jedi come into play. I want to see her grappling with what it means to be one of the final few. And I think there's some really interesting storytelling possibilities there.
That's such a great point. I hadn't thought about that, but she really is one of the last ones who remembers what it was like before the fall and the rise of the Empire. And that is really interesting to see how she reckons with that. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that, but if it doesn't address it, now I feel like I'll be disappointed, even though I had never thought about it before you just mentioned it.
Well, you know what? You're welcome. So obviously we know a small segment, at least, of the mission that is driving her in this show. Because when she appeared in The Mandalorian and she dueled with that magistrate or whatever, her big goal was to find Thrawn. And of course we know that Thrawn was last seen disappearing into hyperspace with a bunch of whales and young Ezra Bridger. So let's talk about Ezra. We're going to see him, obviously. We have a clip in the trailer of Sabine pining for him, watching the hologram, wearing his clothes. She's holding his lightsaber. She's living in his home. Folks, they're not brother and sister, but I digress. Where, first of all, what the heck, right? Do we think that he's still lost at the beginning of the series? Do we think that he and Thrawn have made their way back into the galaxy and Ahsoka is just trying to figure out, or I guess into the, like, the civilized galaxy and Ahsoka is just trying to figure out where they are? Or is there going to be a journey into some weird, like, wild space, unknown regions, like, all these weird unknown hyperspace perils to find him? Basically, what do we expect from that part of the story, which I anticipate, personally, is going to just be the kickoff? I don't think that's going to be the season-long story of trying to find him. But, you know, Haley, maybe I'll go to you first. How much of that season do you expect it will be trying to find him? How much of a role will he actually play in the season?
I'm torn about that. I probably agree with you more so. And, like, it's hard to imagine them being on the chase the whole season. But, like, I've been so disappointed with the plotting of these shows recently. Like, maybe I shouldn't be surprised if he shows up in the last 10 minutes of the last episode. So I don't know. I think I would prefer to, like, get that part of it over with and start to tell, like, the story of what happened in between and, like, what's happening now instead of just searching everywhere. I don't know, like, the main theories of what's going on with Ezra. So apologies if there's, like, a consensus on what should be happening with his roles, and I'm not going to mention it, but, like, I think it would be interesting. I know Ezra in Rebels, like, at certain points struggled with, like, using the dark side in a very pragmatic way. I think it would be interesting if he and Thrawn had, I don't know, long conversations about it, or, like, maybe he was tempted in some ways toward the dark side, and, like, it would be frustrating to see, like, Sabine find him that way, and, like, he's still sort of seduced to the dark side in some, you know, in some kind of parameters, but it would probably be a more interesting story if that were the case. I don't know.
Yeah, my best possible scenario is Ezra shows up after the first episode or two, and there is a weird bro-ship between Ezra and Thrawn. I would really love that. I think that would be super fun. I don't know if I want to be fully Thrawn has helped encourage Ezra to the dark side, or if it's more like a Al Pacino, Robert De Niro in Heat, like, we're not so different, you and I. Like, kind of a mutual respect game. That, I feel like, would be really fun if we get to explore that relationship a little bit. And I feel like Ezra probably is going to show up before the last 10 minutes of the last episode, because we think Thrawn shows up, or at least it seemed so from the trailers. So that would be surprising to me if Thrawn shows up but Ezra doesn't. But my best case scenario is that they have some kind of weird understanding going on. I think it would be a lot more interesting, particularly as Haley mentioned, Ezra's background of, if not being seduced by the dark side, because he very much turns away from the dark side in the final episode of Rebels, then at the very least understanding where it comes from, if that makes sense.
What if she finds them and they're, like, dressed the same, and Ezra has, like, blue face paint, right, and, like, the red contact lenses or whatever, and he's like, you gotta try this stuff, like, it's great, like, he's got such a snazzy outfit. Or what if, like, Thrawn is dressed like Ezra, he's got, like, the blueberry hair. There are just so many storytelling possibilities that would really add to the Star Wars lore.
Oh, here's my question, Eric. You know much more about Grand Admiral Thrawn than I do. Is there any scenario, like, I'm talking about maybe Thrawn is a bad influence on Ezra, is there any scenario in which Ezra is a good influence on Thrawn? Like, do you think that's something they could write into the show?
I think it's possible.
Yeah, I think the whole thing with Thrawn is he's all about order, right? So his deal, he doesn't go for, you know, when you were talking about, like, the dark side and, like, if they were hanging out and having conversations about this stuff, I actually think it would be cool if before Ahsoka and Sabine find Ezra, if we see scenes of the two of them, either in flashbacks or in contemporaneously, still lost wherever they are, talking about the philosophy of, like, Rebels versus Empire, New Republic versus Imperial Remnant, like, order versus liberty. I think, like, it might be kind of weird for Ezra to suddenly become this like erudite philosophical guy, but maybe he could have a conversation at an Ezra level with Thrawn about like what, like Thrawn sort of trying to reason with him of like, listen, while we're here and we have nothing but time, like, why are you guys doing this? Right. And he's talking about his family and oppression. And Thrawn is like, okay, but like, we need to have some degree of like an iron fist, because otherwise you have piracy, you have all kinds of predations and abuses. And Ezra can be like, well, the Empire still allows slavery. And Thrawn's like, well, that's not, you know, that's out of my hands, or whatever. Like, the whole deal with Thrawn is that he gets into this not because he's, you know, a dark side guy, because he's enraptured by Vader and Sidious and the whole, you know, Sith side of things, but because he sees the Empire as the only entity that's capable of dealing with the threats that he has seen in Chiss space, right, in his part of the galaxy. He knows that it's a dangerous place, and he thinks only the Empire can keep people safe. And you can imagine a lot of citizens of the Republic embracing the new Empire in, you know, at the Revenge of the Sith time point for the same reason, which is that they're worried. They see, you know, pirates out there on the frontier. They hear horror stories, right? And they just want it all. They want somebody to come in as a strong leader and take charge. And so I kind of think that Thrawn is immune to the temptation of the, I don't want to say the light side, because he doesn't, I don't think, really go for the light-dark dynamic. But I don't think he's susceptible to Ezra's arguments that we need to allow more freedom and liberty and sort of push away the sort of control slash iron fist tendencies of the Empire.
So I would mostly agree with you, Eric, but I would just point out that in the Thrawn book trilogy, not the one that takes place, that's like the prequel one, but the one that starts with Thrawn by Timothy Zahn. Thrawn does have a protege slash assistant slash boyfriend.
We're going there.
I read between the lines. But he's very much, Eli, his friend, is very much like the Watson to Thrawn's Holmes. And Eli helps Thrawn to see patterns that he may not otherwise see and sort of figure out how to be a person better, and just more empathetic and intuitive while still being his, you know, Thrawny self. So I do think that it's possible, while they're having these deep philosophical conversations, Ezra and Thrawn, that I would love to see, that at the very least, there's, if not a convincing, then a mutual understanding. And I think that would be really interesting. But then again, you know, I don't know how likely it is that we're going to see philosophical conversations about the nature of rebellion and empire in the Ahsoka live action show. It'd be neat if we did, but I don't have my hopes up.
Question, Eric, you probably know the answer to. How long of a like a time gap is there between like the final scene of Rebels and the beginning of the Ahsoka show? Do we know?
So Rebels ends at 0 years before the Battle of Yavin. So the show spans that 5-year time period leading up to the Battle of Yavin. And then Ahsoka begins 9 years afterwards. So there's basically a 9-year gap there.
So he's like an adult man, Ezra is. And yeah, like the last we saw him, he was like a, you know,
yeah, he's not
teenager.
A little blueberry anymore. He's a full grown man.
That bothers me.
Me too.
That makes me sad. That's probably what I'm going to be like most disappointed with, is like, I'm going to be like the Last Jedi like hater, but for the Ezra transformation, you know, like, yeah, the people who were so angry about like old grizzled Luke Skywalker, that's going to be me about Ezra. I don't know. That gives me some stress.
Well, I was just about to say, to Grace's point of, I don't think we're going to get these deep philosophical conversations, I was going to say, I agree. I don't think this is a show that wants to go there, that wants to transcend the popcorn television dynamic that we've mostly gotten from Dave Filoni's TV work in live action, I should say. And I was going to say, I don't, you know, another type of show, a serious, you know, gritty show, would bring Ezra out of this period of time with a new perspective on some of the things that he and the Rebels have been doing, informed by his conversations with Thrawn. And it would make for a challenging dynamic when he reintegrates with his team. And I was going to say, yeah, but I mean, I just don't see them doing that to his character. It would be a huge transformation. You've got all these Rebels fans who are watching. They have an expectation. And then I thought, you know what? Number one, The Last Jedi, right? They've proven that they're not afraid to do that, although maybe now they're afraid to do it again. But number two, he's going to be older, so he just can't be the same happy-go-lucky guy, right? Even as much as he was tempered with a certain seriousness and maturity by the end of the show, there was still a degree of happy-go-lucky blueberry to him. And he's now 9 years older. He's just not going to be the same guy. A lot of things about how he carries himself and how he speaks, they're just going to have to be different, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably the case. And sort of brings me back to my sense of, I don't know, I'm not super enthusiastic about this plot line. And I did not want to be a Debbie Downer, but pull my arm, or twist my arm. I very quickly become a Debbie Downer. I think it would have been either been better to leave the ending of Rebels up to the imagination or do an animated sequel, as listeners well know my thoughts on that. But part of the reason is when you have this kind of sequel, whatever you, the viewer, would have wanted or would have been interested to see, now that's, I mean, that whatever you wanted can't be what happens definitionally. You can't leave it up to the imagination because they're going to tell you what's going to happen. And I don't really know if I want to see a 9 years older Ezra. I really love young Ezra, so that's something that I will have to get over, I guess, is seeing a character that I would prefer not to see in live action at all, but especially in live action and 9 years older.
Well, like, so much of the charm of Rebels, I think, comes from the fact that it, like, was animated. And
right.
This is conjecture, but I assume there is less oversight on the story plotting and the writing of an animated show than there is on, like, one of the major, like, live action offerings of this, like, new era of Star Wars. So it's like, it just seems to me like it's probably more story writing by committee and more people with their hands in the pot and maybe less, like, I don't know, editorial freedom for Dave Filoni or for whoever is, you know, writing these stories. And they, like, the Disney bureaucracy does not have a great track record at this point of like writing coherent stories in these shows. Like, I, not to be rude, but I haven't watched the latest Mandalorian season because, like, it's agonizing. The first episode for me was agonizing. It felt like homework and I have not caught up on it. And so I am worried that the same kind of like dynamics will sort of trickle into this, where maybe they wouldn't have if it was animated.
I mean, we'll see. Dave Filoni is the only person credited as having written any episodes. Of course, we don't know what that counts for in the kind of transmedia synergy era of, you know, Marvel and Disney and having, you know, story group type people. But I think if anybody is given the latitude to do it the way he wants or she wants or they want at Disney, it's Dave Filoni. I mean, I think he is that rare person who probably has enough pull to be able to tell this particular story the way he wants to, especially because he is writing and directing a movie that is going to pick up from this. So this is, in one sense, its own story, but it's also, it has to lay the groundwork for a huge, high-profile project that's going to link all this stuff together. So if he isn't being allowed to do this the way he wants, I think it would be very difficult to then weave this into his movie where I'm sure they've learned their lesson about meddling in the movies. I think he will probably have a lot of freedom, and other directors and writers will have a lot of freedom on their movies. So if you're going to micromanage him on the TV show that's the setup for the movie, that just seems like a recipe for disaster. So I tend to think he'll have the freedom to do what he wants here. Of course, if you go on Twitter, you'll see some folks who are not exactly thrilled about that, right? They don't necessarily love what he's done when he's had the freedom to do whatever he wants in live action. So it could be a mixed bag in that sense. I don't know. I think he will probably make this... I mean, he has talked about how he's had an idea in his mind for where this story goes for a long time. I think he'll probably get to do what he wants to do. As you said, Grace, we all have our own ideas about what comes next for these characters. So whether this will satisfy us is another question. And I'll just reiterate, I'm not thrilled that this is a live-action series either, in part because of the questions that continue to linger about Rosario Dawson. I also think that this is just a story that's a better fit for the format of animation because, like you said, you know, you can have Ezra hopping around and doing, you know, whimsical things or just really sick Jedi moves in animation in a way that's a lot easier than in live action. You know, they can still do it with stunt doubles or CGI or whatever. It's just not going to feel the same. And we're going to have to get used to seeing certain characters move around. You know, Sabine is going to be hopping around, I'm sure, blowing things up. It's just not going to look the same. It's not going to feel the same. There's going to be a tonal difference. And this is the first Star Wars project that's actually had the opportunity to disappoint us in that way, because everything else, even though we've had characters like Saw Gerrera come into live action, this is kind of the first time that we've really had an entire animated storyline or premise get adapted into a new story in live action. So there's just going to be, it's going to be rife with opportunities and pitfalls like that.
And the Montrals.
And the Montrals. And Grace will simply not watch it if episode one does not fix the Montrals.
I mean, you know, it's very important to me. The visuals can take me right out of it, you know?
No, I think you're right. And I think other people probably feel the same way. So we talked about Ezra and Thrawn hanging out together, the new buddy duo comedy that we all want to see. Let's talk a little bit more about Thrawn for a second. We've already kind of raised the question of, is he back when the show starts? Is he still stranded somewhere? We see him in the trailer, but we don't really see him doing anything. So that could be from episode 8 for all we know. So what do we think? Is he back? What is he doing? What are his goals? And I'll just throw this out there, food for thought. We know that the First Order is secretly massing out in the Unknown Regions at this point. We also know that the Imperial Remnant is a little more active in the forefront. Who do we think he's aligned with, or is he potentially trying to carve out his own thing separate from all of them?
No, man. This is going to be a very boring take, but the thing I'm most excited about with Thrawn is that he is being played by his voice actor. So I think that'll be really neat to actually have the voice match up to what he looks like. Again, what's really important to me is that he looks realistic and kind of scary and not just like Blue Man Group-y. That is also important to me. I do think we got in the end of Mando, in the last episode of season 3 of Mandalorian, don't they mention Thrawn and how someone's waiting for Thrawn to get back and sort of reassert his dominance and his role in the New Order? No, not New Order. New Order is a band. Is it the New Order?
I think the Remnant Empire?
Yeah. Not a hit 1980s band, New Order. But Eric, am I remembering that correctly?
Yes, like, they're one of them is like, one of them asks Captain Pelion, like, hey, where's your dude, right? Like, why are you here speaking for him? Like, what's he doing, basically?
Right, yeah. So I think he probably has a role to play. I don't know what it is, but I'm just mostly excited to see Lars Mikkelsen in the role and hopefully bring that same sort of weird energy that he brought in the voice acting to the live action acting.
Do we want Thrawn to be funny? Because like, so the thing about Thrawn is, unlike all the other characters, we were just talking about like translating animation to live action. I think Thrawn will translate well, not only because he's played by the same guy, but because he's a pretty restrained character in terms of his movements. He's not doing a lot of stuff that you can only do in animation. So
That's true. He usually just stands there.
He stands. His face
lecturing.
Is very controlled.
He does fight. He does fight the robots, right?
Well, in a way that I think, you know, Lars Mikkelsen or a stunt double could do in a fairly credible way. Like, he's not doing the jumping that most of the rebels, the ghost crew, I mean, they're flipping and flopping all over the place. Like, Thrawn, I don't think is going to have that issue. But what do we want to see from him personality-wise? This is a chance for Disney to define his personality in a way that Rebels had him, but he wasn't as big of a character as I think he'll be in this, and he wasn't in live action. People have expectations from the books, including the Expanded Universe books, which are no longer canon. They have expectations about how he will interact with people, not just what he wants, but how he expresses himself. Do we want to see any levity, or do we want him to be not a cartoon villain, because he's got a depth to him, but do we want him to be very clearly sort of irredeemable?
I liked, one thing I liked about him in Rebels, like, I read the first of the new series of Thrawn books, and, like, yeah, there's, like, a charm to the Sherlock Holmes, like, shtick, but what I liked in Rebels was, like, how much of a creep he was. Like, he's just kind of creepy, especially when talking about other cultures. And, I think that energy would, like, be good in the live-action show. Like, I'm thinking of when he's, like, I can't remember, it may have been Ezra. He was, like, showing his art collection to him or something. And it's, like, this is an evil person. Like, he enjoys, like, I don't know, just, like, taking the best of other people's cultures and then, like, destroying, like, the people themselves. Like, that just is, like, a different, it's a very, like, clear kind of evil. Yeah. But it's kind of unique for Star Wars. Like, it's almost like an intellectual kind of evil. So I don't know. I think it's unique and would be, like, good to, like, to go back to that kind of, I don't know, weird, creepy, intellectual dialogue about whatever planet he's trying to subjugate.
Yeah.
I think that is, that to me is, like, better writing than the, I observed this and I have solved whatever mystery kind of personality.
I kind of get annoyed with some of, and I'm about to throw some sticks on the fire here, but I kind of get annoyed with some of the Reddit bros who are like, Thrawn's not a villain, he's just an antagonist. No, he's a villain, he's an imperialist, and he's a great villain. Like, don't take it that away from him, because you can be super smart and even funny and be a bad dude. And so I think it would be great to have some of that dry humor that Thrawn occasionally exhibits, but I also think it's important not to redeem him too much. I think we should recognize that this is, for what, no matter what his reasons are, this is a guy who has been helping the Empire for a long time and believes what he's doing is right, but is still helping the Empire, and that's not great. And so if he comes in and helps the Imperial Remnant, that's still bad. So I think he would be very interesting if they kept his villainness, but I don't think that means he can't be funny. Like, he can be funny in his Thrawn way, but I, you know, he just needs to, for me, to find it credible, keep some of that energy that Haley is talking about.
Yeah, and to your point, I mean, he helps the Empire not just conquer territory, but he helps the Empire destroy civilizations and oppress them. I mean, he exploits the creativity of these populations to put them in chains, right? And, you know, there's a lot of real world discourse about the legacy of imperialism, particularly with stolen artwork and what we owe to people that we have wronged in the past and who actually owes it. You know, a lot of conversations that we're not going to get into here, but, you know, these are real world issues. And I think this show has the potential to grapple with that to some degree, right? It doesn't have to be the A story, but using Thrawn as perhaps a proxy for some wrestling with the difficulty of those issues and using him as you said, a different kind of villain, right? For him, it's not, we're going to destroy the Jedi, the Sith will be triumphant, right? For him, it's like order, and at the price of destroying vulnerable populations, by learning about them and figuring out how to defeat them, and that's perfectly acceptable to him. And I think there might be some shades of, as you said, the kind of real-world conversations about imperialism. And boy, I'm excited for the online discourse if that happens, because it's going to be popping off for sure. Well, let's talk about Sabine. I will say that while I'm not thrilled that this show is happening in live action, the character that I'm most interested to see brought into live action is Sabine. I think that Natasha Liu Borgeso probably has performed the best transformation or translation of animation to live action, just based on the sort of production stills and the limited information, you know, admittedly limited information we have. She looks exactly like Sabine. She looks perfect. So she's doing a great job already just on that front. And I'm very interested to see, like, is she an A character? Is she a B character? Like, how much is she just with Ahsoka the whole time? Does she help Ahsoka for kind of phase one, story arc one? Like, what is her role here? And how is she different? Again, we have to sort of keep this in the conversation. Every character we talk about here, it's been 9 years and we haven't seen her at all, right? We've seen some of Ahsoka. We haven't seen Sabine at all. What is she like? How has she changed? What has she been doing? Has she been helping Hera with the New Republic? Has she been chilling in Ezra's house, like watching his DVDs or whatever on Lothal? Like, what's her deal? What has she been up to? Grace, you want to start?
Well, I do agree that she very much looks the part, and I'm excited about that. But I will say, if they turn Sabine into just some like lovesick love interest who's just been pining for 9 years, I'm going to be so annoyed.
But Grace, when have they ever done that before? Finn in The Rise of Skywalker.
Like, it's just going to, it would be such a waste of her character to sideline her in that way and make her entire identity about finding Ezra. And I think finding Ezra clearly is very important to her, but she is very much her own person, aside from finding Ezra, no matter what their relationship is. I never really bought them as having a romantic relationship. If anything, I thought, like, towards the beginning of Rebels, Ezra maybe had like a puppy love crush on her, but then they evolved into more of a sibling relationship. So first of all, I'd just be disappointed if it is romantic at all. And then second of all, to completely undermine her character in that way and have her have no existence at all except to yell Ezra's name the way that Finn yells Rey's name in Rise of Skywalker, that I would be really frustrated by that. And if she like grew out her hair long as some mourning for him, I would be very annoyed by that. So I, even though she's the character who I feel like looks the part and who in theory I would be very excited to see, I'm actually the most nervous about her because I'm really worried that her entire storyline and identity is just going to be defined by Ezra, which I think is a total disservice to her.
So, counterpoint, Finn and Rey belong together.
Well, yeah.
And him, of like, course, of like course. Him yelling her name, he like, yes, he loved her, like, ever since they met. So I disagree in terms of thinking that, like, that's a disservice. The disservice to Finn was that they didn't end up together. Like, that is my biggest complaint. I think that's, a valid concern, Grace, but I also don't think it's super likely that they'll do that. I know, like, Eric is pointing out how much of, like, the trailer seems to indicate that she's, like, pining after him and, like, wearing his clothes and stuff. I'm sure she's done other stuff too, like, especially if she's the one, like you said, Eric, who was like going into the temple and like she seems to have his lightsaber and like, I don't know, I'm curious if there's some kind of like force sensitivity going on that we didn't know about, or like she's like trying to learn more about that, because it sort of seems to be setting that up, but maybe that's totally off base. I don't know.
All right, this is unrelated, but my issue with Finn yelling Rey's name is not that he's, you know, in love with her, because I do think that Finn and Rey should have ended up together. It's that he's given nothing else to do except yells Rey's name, and I want him to do more, just as I want Sabine to do more than just have her sole purpose in the narrative to be to pine for Ezra.
And I think that she will have more to do. I agree with you that Rebels portrays them as siblings throughout the run of the show. I think you would be hard-pressed to argue that the trailer is not implying that she has a thing for him at this point, which is weird. And as much as I've been joking about it, I think it's very weird and I don't like it. But I think it's definitely what they're setting up. And if they're not setting that up, shame on the trailer creator. Like, shame on them for, like, creating the discourse by very clearly having her do things that you do not do with your brother. But having said that, regardless of whether she's in love with him in the show, I feel fairly confident that that won't be all she does. And here's a thought. You know, we're talking about legacy. She carries on the legacy of a clan of Mandalorians, right? I mean, she's got that whole side of her identity, and we've already seen that Mandalore has had a rebirth in storytelling in canon in terms of being the focus of these complex stories about identity and family and belonging. Will we see her interact with Din? I mean, is she going to play a role in that whole deal that's going on? Are they going to try to weave that in? I think that would be very interesting. I think that's an interesting side of her that even in Rebels was only explored a few times because they had so much else going on. But I could totally see them establishing retroactively in the opening episode or two that she has been doing things along those lines to try to reconnect with, you know, the clan, whatever, you know, Clan Ren, and or just like I could see them doing something with that part of her character. And I think that would be very interesting.
Yeah, I would really like that if they explored her Mandalorian-ness, because I always really loved that in Rebels whenever there were episodes like with her learning how to use the Darksaber. So, and they've done another show about a Mandalorian, so why not incorporate some of that here?
All right, so I've got a question for you both. Who's a mean green leadership machine? Wow, neither of you are going to bite. Okay, we're going to talk about Hera now. So I think that we're talking about like how the actors approximate the characters. I think that it's very difficult to match the look that they created for Hera in animation. I think Mary Elizabeth Winstead does a credible job, and obviously a lot will rest on the performance. You have to capture that kind of soothing but firm voice that Vanessa Marshall did so well in the animated series. So that's going to be tough, but the look does not bother me too much. It's certainly not as good as Sabine's look, but whatever. I'm mostly interested to see how they weave her in, because they're kind of establishing that she's not off on her own on a solo quest or just brooding or whatever that the other characters are doing. She's very much in the thick of it in the New Republic as a leader. We see her, you know, I think side by side with Mon Mothma at one point. So that's fascinating to me, right? And some of the video games and other and the books, there's a great trilogy of books that folks should definitely check out called Alphabet Squadron that deals with her as a New Republic general and the pressure of leading essentially the cleanup operation, trying to mop up the remnants of the Empire. This takes place after that, but I would really be interested to see how they weave in the pressure of being a leader of this fledgling government. What exactly is she doing, right? Is she in charge of space forces, ground forces? Like, what exactly is her role? What is her relationship like with other leaders? Does she get along with them? How does that relate to Ahsoka's quest? Like, does the New Republic, does she have to basically say, I can't support you for some reason, but like unofficially, here's some persons, the people that you can go get help from? Like, what is she actually doing in the story, right? And I think that keeping her separate, while it would be sad because you can't get the whole gang back together, would be really interesting narratively to have her have to keep herself at a distance because she has these responsibilities to this broader movement.
I mean, I love Hera. She's such a great character, and she is just such a fun leader character as well. So I would be really interested to see the leadership role that she is inhabiting now, and especially if she has scenes with Mon Mothma, like the girl bossery that would be on display. So exciting. I'm excited to see where she is. I'm not super thrilled about the way she looks, but that's I mean, it's kind of like with Ahsoka. It's very hard to make that kind of character look good in live action, and I don't know how convinced I will be. And I'll tell you, if her Laku are styrofoamy, then we're gonna have a problem. Same with the Montrals. But that's the theme of the episode. We want the Laku and Montrals to look realistic, and if not, then I'm just turning off the TV right now. No, probably not. I'll finish the episode, but I will complain about it vocally to anyone who will listen to me, and most people who will not. So I don't love her look, but I am willing, given my love for the character, to sort of put aside my skepticism in that regard.
Haley, any thoughts about Hera?
I saw the picture too. So first of all, I think Hera's great. I don't have any like pressing questions about her character or like big things I want to see. Except like, I don't know, she has a kid. I would love to see motherhood portrayed in a positive way in Star Wars.
Right.
But like beyond that, it's like, I just want to see her like fly ships and do cool stuff. I don't love the way it looks either. And like, maybe I'm just too old and I don't have the imagination to enjoy live action as much as a child would. But like, to me, it just like, it looks like Halloween. Like it just, it doesn't look like, it doesn't look like it should. It doesn't. And the thing is, like, I wouldn't be able to do it better. And so I feel bad complaining about it, because I'm sure they're trying their hardest. And it's just difficult to change someone into a cartoony looking alien, but also realistically. but it does sort of take you out of the story. We'll see. Maybe the writing and the acting will be so good I won't notice. But I probably will, because I don't know. I'm quite the critic these days.
I would like to see a not dead mother in Star Wars, like a mom who's alive and is a good mom.
Yeah.
Because we don't often get that. We got a teensy-eensy bit of that in Obi-Wan Kenobi seeing Breha and Beru. But like an actual mother figure character who is alive and a good mom, very rare in Star Wars.
I hate to correct you, especially on a point about female representation, but we did see in the Clone Wars, there was a story arc, there was the Geonosian Queen. So I just want to point that out. You know, so first of all, I would love to see like a research experiment where they ask people who have and have not seen Rebels if they think that like Hera, for example, looks well done. Like if you give them like just like describe or give them reference art of a Twi'lek, like a sketch of a Twi'lek, like a concept art sketch, but don't let them see the animation. And like, I bet you that overwhelmingly the people who have not seen Rebels would be like, yeah, that's fine. Like if you compare it to how they think other characters look, I think they would rate Hera as fitting pretty well in with other characters. And I bet the Rebels folks would be on the opposite end of the scale and would think that she looks like significantly less credible than other characters who have been brought from like a concept art sketch into live action, because it's expectations, right? It's all about having seen it for how many years, right? You know what you expect. You know how the Leku move, you know how the clothing moves, you know how the mouth moves, all these little subtleties that it's hard to pull out and write down, but you instinctively process them as you watch the show. And that's what's going through your mind when you see the clip from the trailer or whatever. And I think that's just a hurdle that they were never going to surmount with all these characters. That's kind of why I wanted to bring up Sabine, because I think she does clear that hurdle. But that's a rare success story. And we've been talking about even Ahsoka didn't really clear it. So they have a chance, I guess, to fix that with Ahsoka. But I think that's going to be a continuing problem for us with folks like Hera throughout the run of the show. So we talked about motherhood. Do we think we're going to see Jason Syndulla? There is, spoiler alert, I guess, leaked Lego box art that shows that he will get a minifigure in a Lego set. I did not look for the full art. I have no idea what this is part of. I'm guessing the ghost, but I don't know. And he looks pretty darn human. He does not look as half Twi'lek as he did in the final scene of Rebels. So he seems to be in the show. Do we like that? Do we hope that he just has a cameo? Do we want him to play an important role? Are we excited for the alien-human hybrid discourse around the Ahsoka series now? I mean, what are we hoping for from Jason Syndulla?
I don't understand the genetics. I didn't understand it in the cartoon either, so I can, like, this is not a new problem. But he shouldn't look like that. He shouldn't look either of the ways.
That should be your, like, your review of the first episode that he's in. He shouldn't look like that. That's just wrong.
I mean, it should be, and that's the thing, like, it's easier if you make him just look like a human boy, you know? Like, that's, I can't complain about the, like, the Leku not looking good if he's just, like, a human person. Which is, this Lego little guy has brown hair, which in the show, they're, like, the big way of showing that he was Hera's son was that he had green hair. I'm sorry. Neither of them is good, in my opinion. But, like, who knows? Maybe I just don't understand the mysteries of genetics in the Star Wars galaxy. I guess what I'm saying is the upside is I won't be complaining. I won't be complaining about how he looks like he's from the Halloween store. Because he'll just be like a guy, I guess.
I'll be honest. I don't really care about Jason. I don't really care what he looks like. I think vaguely he should look more like he looks in the cartoon. But even then, I don't think he looks good in the cartoon. So, yeah. I mean, if he shows up, that's fine. If not, that's fine. I have no strong opinions about it. I feel kind of about Jason the way I feel about Taylor Swift. Like, everyone has strong opinions about it except me. So that's how I feel.
So, like, plot wise I think it would be like fun for him to get to talk to Ezra about Kanan, like, to get like Ezra's perspective about his dad, because, like, I don't know, maybe that's just me being sentimental, but, like, that would be cool to watch. But, like beyond that, it's like, I don't know, it's a kid. I don't know what else he should be adding to the story.
He's going to be 9 years old. So, you know, just old enough, I think, in Star Wars to go on some precocious adventures of his own. Yeah, you know, as we kind of wrap up here, we've talked about the mother. Let's talk about the father. This is very much a spiritual sequel to Rebels. Do we think we're going to get any Kanan flashbacks? Anything more than a few mentions? Are we gonna see a visual live-action representation of Kanan? Let's get some predictions on the board. Grace, you're up first.
I think that'd be super interesting. I think he might show up as a Force ghost. That's what I would predict, is if he shows up in live action, it's going to be as a Force ghost. I think he'll probably be mentioned, but it really depends on how much they're trying to cater to Rebels fans and how much they want to bring in a new audience. Because if they're really intending for this to be a show for Rebels fans, I think it's more likely that we see some version of him. If we're just trying to get people who like The Mandalorian to watch another live action show, then I think it's less likely.
Haley, what do you think?
I would like to see him in the World Between Worlds. Like, I don't know if that moment is still there, but it was, I mean, the moment was there when Ezra was there. So, but I don't really want to see, like, beyond that, unless it's, like, I don't know, revelatory of something interesting about his character or, like, relevant to the plot. I don't know, some dream sequence of, like, oh, I miss Kanan. Like, that's not super necessary. I feel like that can be done with dialogue.
Yeah, I think Grace is right that a Force ghost is definitely on the table. I was thinking about how people got mad that Bo-Katan never mentioned Satine when she was telling Din about the history of Mandalore. And I don't know. I don't know if it's a perfect analogy, but I could see them doing what I think would be very controversial and just not mentioning him. It would be very weird. I don't think it would be the same thing as Bo-Katan not mentioning Satine, but I think it's totally on the table. Who knows what their plans are? Who knows if they have some reason that they don't want to mention him? I don't know. But I think it's on the table. I don't think it's likely. I think we're likely to get significant conversation, especially if Jason is in the picture. And I do think a Force Ghost appearance is on the table. What context that's in, whether he appears to Ezra in a moment of need or maybe in his initial isolation, who knows? But I think it's possible. Here, let me wrap up with this question. It's called Ahsoka, right? But how Ahsoka-focused is it actually going to be? Because the animating premise of her role in this era, as we've seen so far, is to find Thrawn, to find Ezra. The trailer makes a big deal of Sabine watching a hollow of Ezra. I'm not going to get into that whole thing again, but very clearly she's very focused on a personal level on Ezra. We know that Thrawn himself looms as a villain that Ahsoka is trying to stop. So it seems like this is very much focused to some degree on the hunt for Ezra, the hunt for Thrawn, dealing with Thrawn. Do we think that this is going to be, like, how much time are we going to get to dwell on Ahsoka as a character?
My suspicion is that the only reason it's called Ahsoka and is nominally the Ahsoka show is because Ahsoka is well known enough, and that really it should be named The Hunt for Ezra or something like that. But because Ahsoka's relatively well known and she's shown up in The Mandalorian, I think that that's the real reason she is the star and namesake of the show. I don't think it's going to be very Ahsoka-y. And I am extra suspicious of that given the Book of Boba Fett was barely like 3 chapters of Boba Fett. So I do not believe that is going to be very Ahsoka-centric.
Do you think that they should have called it Dawn of Thrawn?
The Thrawn Dawn.
That's a perfect title. You know what I'm excited for? Unrelated. I think Captain Rex is going to be in this.
Oh, yeah, that'll be nice.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Well, this is rumors.
There's rumors. Well,
okay.
Star Wars News Net.
Okay.
.com says that Captain Rex will be here. And that, to me, is fun.
That points to either sort of like, let's get the gang back together for one last mission type of thing, or they're going to seriously deal with Ahsoka's past, and he will come in not to participate in a mission or a battle.
But to marry her.
Oh okay, wow. Christ. Okay, well, definitely.
He's like 60. Although I guess she's also
they're the same age. Something.
Well, yeah, but he looks older.
You get into these weird questions of biological age versus developmental age because he had the advanced...
Yeah, that's true. She's actually older than him.
It's, you know, which is not the first time that Star Wars has done that problematically with a younger man. And of course, we all saw how well that worked out. All right, well, whatever happens, you know that we're going to talk about it here on Hoth Takes. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode. If you want to share your thoughts or perhaps suggest topics for future shows, you can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter at hothtakes. I'm Eric Geller on Twitter. Grace is Grace_Seegers, and Haley is Burdenator. Haley made our wonderful logo and banner art. I edited the show and put together our music. And as always, for legal purposes, we want to note that all Star Wars themes, music, and sound effects are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. You can find a complete archive of past episodes on our website, hothtakes.wordpress.com. And if you like Hoth Takes, please share it with a friend. You can find us on all the major podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. We'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.